morning, everyone. I'm Brett Harris. I'm from the University at Albany and also the New York State Office of Alcoholism and Substance Abuse Services. And what comes along with an ESPERT presentation is a very long title, so I happen to have spelled out ESPERT. But anyway, what I'm really going to talk about is adoption and implementation, so I'm very excited to present this research because, you know, as far as we know, no study has compared adoption and implementation in the same study. And it's also going to focus on school-based health centers, so we're going to transition and talk a little bit about an adolescent setting. I have no relationships to disclose. So New York State does a youth development survey, and we found, you know, significant that alcohol and drug use is a significant public health problem in our state, just like it is nationwide. And ESPERT is one of the ways that we wanted to address this with our adolescents. The research does show increased identification of students with risky use. That ESPERT does help to reduce alcohol and marijuana use, and also it prevents initiation among those who haven't started. You know, jumping to this last bullet, it is a good fit for the adolescent's developmental stage because they resist authority and they want their own autonomy. But convenience and confidentiality is specific to the school-based health center. A school-based health center is not a fancy name for the school nurse's office. It's actually a primary care clinic located in a school. It's run by an outside healthcare organization. So what that provides is not only the convenience of the school where students are spending a lot of time, but also confidentiality because the services are provided are covered under HIPAA. Also, we found that school-based health centers would be ideally a great setting to provide ESPERT in our state because we have 225 school-based health centers. It's the largest network in the nation, and 111 of them actually serve students that are adolescents. And, of course, ESPERT is recommended by the American Academy of Pediatrics to be conducted annually in primary care. What the research does show is that pediatricians are not screening for substance use. Less than half of them do. And those who do report are not using a standardized tool. So what a standardized tool provides an algorithm so that that you can know exactly how the student screens and then what type of appropriate intervention to provide. What happens then without that is that providers rely on their own clinical impressions, and doing that, they tend to not identify everyone or provide intervention. And then a lot of students, adolescents, end up not receiving services that would help them. What we don't know is what's happening in school-based health centers where providers are not pediatricians, but they're physician assistants and nurse practitioners. And, of course, it's a totally different setting than any pediatric setting. So the purpose of this research was not only it's really to figure out how to expand ESPERT throughout our network. So what factors are associated with adoption and implementation? So what facilitates or impedes a program director from deciding, yes, we want to do ESPERT in our site, and also from a clinician and implementing it with fidelity. So this presentation, of course, being one of the first to do something like this, is exploratory, and it's going to explore knowledge, attitudes, and perceptions among program directors and clinicians regarding ESPERT. So it surveys program directors who are the decision makers about whether they want ESPERT in their site and clinicians who will actually be delivering the service. So knowledge will be awareness of ESPERT as well as training received, and then attitudes towards substance use screening, and perceptions will be perceptions of role responsibility to do carry out screening and intervention, whether they think that they should be doing it in the school-based health center or someone else should be doing it, perceived self-efficacy, so if they feel confident in their ability to deliver these services. That was asked only people that provide clinical services, and perceived effectiveness at helping students to reduce their use. We also don't know what's currently happening in school-based health centers. So what is the current ESPERT practice? Are they doing it or are they not? And also, what components of the ESPERT model are they doing? How how often are they doing it, and how in combination. So when I say components, I don't just mean screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment. I actually mean I broke it down into a number of different components. So asking students about substance use, asking about quantity and frequency, providing positive reinforcement for those who are not using, explaining the effects of substance use on students, advising students to change, assessing readiness to change risky substance use, and referral to treatment. And then the question is, how does knowledge, attitudes, and perceptions impact practice? And then what are their perceived barriers to discussing substance use with students, getting students to return for follow-up sessions, because that's what's supposed to be great about school-based health centers is to get them to return. This is a challenge among, for ESPR, to get people to return for extra sessions. But if they're ready in the school, they should return. And then also providing referrals to treatment for students they suspect have substance use problems. So this was a cross-sectional web-based survey. It was sent out by the director of the School-Based Health Center program in our Department of Health, and it was sent to all of the program directors. So there are 51 of them, because there are 51 organizations, these healthcare organizations, that have multiple school-based health centers. So 51 of them sent out, then were asked to forward the email invitation to one of their clinicians at each of their school-based health centers. It serves students appropriate for ESPR middle and high school students. So the surveys were collected in May and June of 2013. So for the results of demographics, 64 responses was a 40% response rate, mean age about 45 years, mostly female. This population was mostly female. Tends to happen in schools and with the nurse practitioner and physician assistant population. It was 77% white, 20% African American. Most of the clinicians were nurse practitioners. It was 70%, with approximate 17 years in practice, and a little bit more than half were in New York City. So I'm going to start talking about knowledge. Reporting awareness of ESPRT, they were provided with a paragraph describing what ESPRT was and to ask them, whether they were aware of ESPRT. And you can see, there's slightly more than half were aware of ESPRT, but many more program directors than clinicians were aware of ESPRT. And then moving on to training, they were asked about whether they'd received training in substance use screening, explaining the effects of substance use on students, and advising students to change their risky substance use. So similarly to the last slide, there was less training among clinicians than among program directors. So of course we think it's clinicians that should have this training because they're the ones providing the service. So that, that's a deterrent to providing these services with fidelity. Now, attitudes and perceptions. So the first one is going to cover attitude towards substance use screening. So the STEM was screening for substance use will, and then result in early intervention. So the people, program directors, 72% believed that it would result in early intervention compared to only 58.5% of clinicians. And then lead to improved student outcomes, it dropped for both of them. But once again, it's lower for clinicians. So the attitude towards substance use screening is low for both program directors and clinicians in their belief that it's actually going to do something, but lower among clinicians, the ones who are the ones that need to be motivated to provide the service. Now for the next two, representing role responsibility and self-efficacy, they were similarly asked. They had these two STEMs. Then they were asked to present for all the components that I previously talked about of the ESPRT model to their agreement, strongly disagree to strongly agree. So the first one is perceived role responsibility. In your opinion, it is the responsibility of an SBHC, which is school-based health center clinician, too. I didn't present all of the components here, to save time and space, but these were the ones that, were significant. To screen students for substance use using a standardized tool. So in all, their role responsibility was fairly high. They did feel that this was their role in the school-based health center, but this one was particularly lower about using a standardized tool. So they didn't feel, clinicians did not feel it was their role significantly less than program directors. So they all thought that school-based health centers should be using a standardized tool for screening. And then the last group for perceived self-efficacy, I am confident in my ability to. These three came out significant, once again, lower among clinicians, to explain the effects of substance use to students, to assess students' readiness to change the risky substance use and referral to treatment. And I like to pinpoint that assessing students' readiness to change, because that is a key component of the brief intervention of the expert model and in motivational interviewing, which does make it a unique evidence-based practice. A perceived effectiveness was very important here. This was very low among both clinicians and program directors. About a quarter of them for alcohol, illicit drug, and prescription drug abuse felt effective at helping students reduce their use. And I also asked them about a similarly sensitive topic about STDs and unwanted pregnancies, and 75% felt effective at that. So that was surprising for sensitive topics that they were so much more felt so much more effective at helping students with those issues. Now, current practice. So almost half of them said they did not practice any part of the ESPERT model. Only 21.8% actually practiced the whole thing, screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment. And, of course, other people reported doing different pieces of it. Now, here are actually all the components listed. So I asked all of these for the role responsibility and self-efficacy, but I asked them how often they or others in their school-based health center perform these components of the model. And I reported here only those that reported doing this more than half the time. So remember, ESPERT is something that's universal and should be done all the time, all these pieces in combination. So I asked them individually about, and these are for more than half the time. So you can see that nothing is, there are a lot of them, nothing is done all the time here. And there are certain things that are done more often than others, such as asking students about their substance use. The things, once again, that come out here is the standardized tool. Only about slightly more than half of them actually do this more than half the time. It should be done, regularly, at least annually, and as we hear, even more than annually. Assessing students' readiness to change their substance use was also pretty low, and that's it's key to figuring out what kind of intervention to provide and how to direct them to actually change, reduce their use, to know where they are and their motivation to change. And then only half of them report referring students with substance use problems to specialty treatment. So what does this all mean? How do factors impact practice? So this one, I just want to explain a little bit here. Those who are aware versus those who are unaware of ESPERT. So those who were aware of ESPERT had higher role responsibility and self-efficacy. But also, I say frequency of ESPERT practice. Well, obviously, if they're aware, then they'd be more likely to practice it. But this is how frequent they practice the components of the model. So based on their awareness of ESPERT, they will be more likely to do the different, more often practice different components of the model, whether or not they're actually doing the whole ESPERT model. Now, for factors correlated with frequency and completeness of practice, so the more familiar they were with ESPERT, the higher the perceived role responsibility and self-efficacy, and the more they perceive themselves effective at reducing alcohol and prescription drug abuse, the more likely they were to practice different components of the ESPERT model and completely in combination. Now, perceived barriers. So for discussing substance use, so the next three slides I'm going to talk about the three questions that I asked, and the barriers are listed in order as to the highest prevalence of the reported barriers combined, so among program directors and clinicians. And then I broke it up so you could see the differences. So time constraints was the number one reported barrier, as well as students not telling the truth about their use and lack of training. You can see that there are, for the most part, higher perceived barriers among clinicians, the ones that are going to be doing the service, especially among time constraints, and then not knowing where to refer students to treatment. So they are the ones that will be referring students to treatment. There's also an issue with uncertainty regarding the effectiveness of the available treatments, and students risking punishment by parents, school, and the law. So that's, you know, an issue with confidentiality. Of course, program directors, a lot more of them think that they always discuss substance use with students. So the return visits. Now, the research does show that having students come for return, or actually it's an adult population, having people come for return visit makes the intervention more effective. So what is getting in the way of getting students to return for follow-up sessions? Students not thinking their use is problematic. Students who use substances are often absent from school, and students not wanting to come back to the school-based health center to talk about their substance use. So the great thing about ESPRT in a school, in any primary care setting, is you're getting people to come in for some other issue and then getting them to talk about their substance use because they're already there. They're not seeking out the help for substance use. So the problem is then you have to get, if they screen positive, you provide a brief intervention and think it would be great to get them to come back. It'll be beneficial to them. They have to want to come back just for that. So that's a big challenge in getting students to come up. As you can see, they don't want to come back to talk about it. Now, for referral to treatment, students are not interested in treatment. This is very similar to the last issue. Students have difficulty finding transportation to referral sites, and there's a lack of adolescent-specific treatment programs in the area, and then being unfamiliar with or unaware of treatment programs in the area. Something that New York State, that we found here, is that a lot of the school-based health centers all have to provide mental health services, and a lot of them have mental health staff right in the school-based health center. So what they tend to do for those students is to refer them in-house. And what comes out of this is that to duly certify mental health providers to actually provide substance use services as well, and this is something that state that we're looking into now. This is actually an issue that we heard because of confidentiality, because once you refer out here, there's an issue. You need to talk with parents, and you need to send students outside of the school-based health center. So confidentiality issue is key on that one. Another one that came up with students and their parents cannot afford treatment, and then once again, the clinician-patient confidentiality. So the limitations in my survey is, response bias and it's survey fatigue. So by the end of the survey, there were fewer responses to questions, people, dropping out of the survey. Generalizability, this is just a school-based health center in New York State, and we don't know how to, it'll generalize to a larger population. It's cross-sectional, qualitative methods to explore further what was found, and it was exploratory, it was limited to bivariate analysis, and did not control for confounders. So conclusions is that ESPRT has not been adopted in most sites, or then not implemented with fidelity at most sites. So simple diffusion, so it's not just going to trickle through the network. It's insufficient. Active dissemination is required. So there's also variation in practice of ESPRT model components, and what may contribute to that is perceived role responsibility, self-efficacy, effectiveness, and familiarity with ESPRT. So what is important is to have strong dissemination efforts, so education, training, and technical assistance targeting perceptions and identified barriers. My references, and that's my contact information, and of course, we're saving questions to the end.